As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, put a little. I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
How do you feel about your golf picks so far? Fine.
I feel all right.
A couple guys might be dead.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. Yeah.
Spawn,
Kim.
Kim, 77s, seven
yeah,
over.
Yeah.
Probably that's dead. Yeah. Does anybody win from seven over?
I did make it clear that I was taking Siwoo Kim, right? Not Tom Kim.
You did.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make sure. I saw Tom Kim, like, even. I'm like, can I try that? No.
I
think I said Siwoo.
Kim? Little bait and Kim?
Yeah. So yeah, there's a couple of guys that are in real trouble, but I mean, even Koepka ended up, I think, two over. He's three over, so five back. Like, that's manageable, I think. So, I've got other guys in between there, right?
Yes.
So like Rory and Oberg are both what, two back, three back? Three's the lead now.
An amateur leads.
Yeah. Well, that won't last.
Oh, listen to that.
I feel okay about the picks. Okay. I did not see DeChambeau coming. He's having a very good start anyway. He started during our show. So.
Well, he's won this event.
Right.
And, you know, he's mostly a top player, so that wouldn't surprise you that much that he's going to maybe contend, right?
I'm stunned.
Why?
Because he's looked terrible in like the last – since he won the U.S. Open 2 years ago, he's, I think, mostly been a disaster in
really?
The majors. Yeah.
Okay.
Like comically bad.
I remember some of that.
Yeah. So
his winning wouldn't be more shocking than this amateur.
No. No.
Or Ben James.
Yeah.
Or some of these other people.
No, he's a big famous guy who's won tournaments. Like, so you know it's in there. It just hasn't been there very much.
You never gave him a thought.
Not even once.
Okay.
No. And he wasn't even, I don't know where he was in the odds. He probably was in the top 20. But he, I think, for the first major this year, maybe even the second, he was like, no, it was Rahm and Rory and Scotty probably all three times. I'm trying to think like how high he was, but I feel like he's been someone way up there.
You didn't pick Fleetwood?
I don't like Fleetwood.
Analytics.
Everybody likes him. Everybody likes him. He's dressing like the dad from Leave It to Beaver, for crying out loud.
Did you see the tweet?
I cannot get behind a guy that looks like Ward Cleaver.
The show has never sounded older. Did you see the tweet that compared his outfit today to Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting?
No, I didn't see that. No.
He said, a woman wrote, this guy looks like he might have just skipped the Red Sox Carlton Fisk game to go see about a girl.
I kind of like the whole fit, but I just he's just sort of over there by himself.
Mm, interesting.
What the deal?
It feels like a snub.
I should say I don't like. I've liked him. I just don't like him to win the tournament.
I do.
No, good for you.
I'm all about
him. Rooting for him.
I am. Let's go.
I gotta tolerate you fist pumping. Thank God you're off tomorrow. You're fist pumping good shots by DeChambeau, which is just nauseating.
I love this game.
Oh, this bet is great.
I love this game. And I'm listening to Jeremy and I'm listening to Matt Larkin and I'm listening to Matt Collar, but I look up and I know immediately if it's one of your guys or not, and if it's good or bad, I'm into it.
You have not,
John Rahm.
You haven't stooped to, I hope this guy snaps his ankle on a sprinkler head. Like
that's
I
you.
Will often do, that's me. But you have been wishing ill upon my players. I've heard you. Just shot. It's over the green and into the way. You're like begging for guys to miss, which is, you know, that's what the bet is quintessentially.
I don't feel like I'm over the top on that, but I'm enjoying it. And my reaction means nothing to anything.
Of course.
So
just aggravating to me.
There was somebody up there I'd never seen before who made a putt. I'm like, yeah, let's go. This guy. This is my guy right now.
It's the best feature of the bet.
I love this bet. I mean, I said yesterday a number of times, this is a great day when the picks, we do the picks. It was you this time. I get the Open Championship. Oh, I already can't wait. Let's go to Dan here. Hi, Dan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So, one other potential tuck replacement that I was thinking about could be the winger Quentin Byfield from the Kings. He scored 24 goals in 79 games last year. That's a lot of goals for the Kings because they didn't score much. And I was thinking maybe he could be, I think their penalty kill was around 30th in the league. So maybe you could throw in Byram if you think you can't extend him, and McLeod, because he plays on the penalty kill. Maybe something like that to try to kind of have an upgrade at the forward position. And then you'll save a little cap space with getting rid of those two players. And then maybe you can kind of allocate some of that.
I like the player. I'm curious where you got – is this just your own idea? Or have you read this somewhere? Because I don't know – it would really surprise me if the Kings – oh, I guess – I mean, it's no more surprising than the Leafs maybe wanted to move off of Matthew Nyes to me. I'm not sure why they would want to divest themselves of Quentin Byfield myself. But I like the player. I mean, it's a fine idea. Have you read this somewhere?
My idea.
Okay, gotcha.
No, just my idea.
Yep.
Is he – that's a trade then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's under contract for
– like $6 million for the next – probably 4 to 5 years.
28, 29. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan. Tell me what it costs.
I think it's the same sort of, I think it's not quite nice, but it's pretty close.
Byram, then.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's a fine idea. I don't think he's at everything that Nyes is, and he's not paid as much as Nyes either. But he's a nice player, nice young player.
I had a thought today. So many different times along the way with the Sabres this year, it was just like so back. Whatever that was for you, buying something, simply watching games, going to games, whatever it was for you, there was this, of course, this renewed enthusiasm and energy. I had another version of that today.
Oh, yeah?
Let's have the schedule. I want to see the schedule. I love schedules. I love it in football. With the Sabres, for a decade, I've not cared at all. I was going to games, and I ended up moving on from that. But other than that, just, all right, whatever, bunch of weeknights. How many afternoon games? How many Leafs? Whatever. But today I was like, let's see it.
Right.
I want to know who I've got here. Who am I opening with? Where am I going? But that's, I think I remember when Mike Gilbert was with the Sabres, his saying that it tended to happen during the baseball All-Star game break. Like one of those days.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's still true, but maybe it'll be a few weeks.
I feel like mid-July is the schedule. But
mid-July.
But I'm like you. I've not. I mean, 2 years. I remember the schedule came out while I was in Spain, which was, so that would have been between June 25th and July 8th or something. Those were the dates that I was away, because I remember the schedule came. You texted me. We had just checked in.
7:30.
We had just checked in. 7:30 games. I'm in this incredible, Vrbo Airbnb in Malaga with a rooftop pool all to ourselves. And, like, my phone's buzzing, the Sabres schedule, and it's you bitching about 7:30 games. Anyway, that's the last time.
That means we stay until 7:30.
That's the last time I can remember when the schedule.
Are they going to have more of those because they're good now?
I don't know what happened.
Are the Sabres America's darling?
Might be more.
Are they the darlings of TNT and ESPN now?
Could be.
7:30. Yeah. Baseball's going the other way.
Earlier.
I mean, so many baseball games every night start at 6:30. What about that idea? Have they thought of that?
I wish they would.
I wish. I'd love that. Let's see some 6:30.
I'm all for earlier games. All right, well, add Quentin Byfield to the, at least the show generated ideas. Fine enough player.
Sure. Frank is with us. Hello.
Hey, guys. So I recently changed my stance. I think that we should actually keep Alex Tuck. For some reason, I'm weighing the options, and then leaning towards keeping him would actually be better, and it would seem like it would be detrimental to our team's chemistry just to lose him. But I also want to get your opinions on it. Do you think it would be like another 05-06 situation where we lost J.P. Dumont, and then at the end of the year of the 2006-2007 season, some players have actually said that they were missing that J.P. Dumont-type character? So just want to get your opinion on that. Thank you.
I think there's always going to be a risk here that the team – like emotionally, chemistry-wise, they're really down about the idea that they couldn't keep the band together. But I think it's pro sports, and guys usually can get over that. Like, they're going to have their own interest in the team this year. And so I think it would be hard for some guys to swallow, depending on how close emotionally they are to Tuck. But all the same, I think players can be very similar to fans in this way, which is, okay, well, what are you going to do now? You're taking this player away. Tage Thompson, you're taking my winger away, or my co-winger, or whatever. I don't know if Tage is going to be a center or a winger. Probably depends on what the next few weeks bring and whether they keep Tuck or not. But, you know, you're taking my guy. All right, but who's in his place, right? They all love Dylan Cousins. And they got Josh Norris. Like, okay, well, Josh Norris is really good. You know, he can't stay healthy now, but guys get over it. So I don't think it has to be devastating or anything. I don't think it approaches the co-captains. But, you know, Dumont's a better comp, and you mentioned Dumont. My brain went to, this isn't Drury and Briere. It's not the co-captains. It's not two guys leaving right at the same time after all the success. Dumont is maybe a better fit.
Well, his point, the caller's point was, I think, that he was a precursor, Dumont, that they had a real look at a cup, and he walked. And that was tough. I mean, that was arbitration, and like we don't want to pay you,
right?
Basically. That was Sabres. And that set the table for Drury and Briere, you know, lacking confidence. They had their own personal experiences, but just like that the team kind of lost its way.
But in that season, I know they still flamed out and it didn't even get to game 7 of the same round that they lost the previous year, but they won the President's Trophy. They were not
correct.
They were not hanging their heads over J.P. Dumont during, you know, I mean, did they miss him at playoff time? Sure, I'm not going to tell you different. I loved Dumont on that team. But their performance, I mean, they won 10 in a row to start the year.
Yeah, right.
So they were not sulking about it.
Take your chances.
So, there is that. So what? You know, I like the caller. Like, I don't think I'm flipping back and forth. I started out really wanting them to keep Tuck just because it feels like this is what always happens. And I don't want to see them take a step back. Like, I don't want Tuck to leave and then you're backfilling with all the kids. Like you were talking with Matt Larkin an hour ago, how that's often been our existence. It's like, we got all these guys and they'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And I'm concerned about that. I don't think that's what they'll settle for, but that doesn't mean that that's not where they'll end up. Like, they may move heaven and earth trying to get Jordan Kyrou or Quentin Byfield or Matthew Nyes or whomever else you want to dream about. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. There's still no move clauses to be dealt with and all that kind of stuff, that as much as their reputation should have been helped by them having a great year, I'm not assuming that they're going to be able to do whatever it is they think can improve the team while letting Tuck leave. And that might be the best case because it's the safest. I know what you are. Everyone likes you. You're valuable. I trust that you'll be excellent for at least a little while of this contract. I don't know what'll happen down the road, but I want to keep contending. Tuck's the safest play because it's a bird in the hand. But I'm sort of settling into, if he wants, $11 or $12 million, this is not going to happen here, I don't think.
That seems right.
And I think he'll get that on the open market.
Let's go to Mike next. Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Boone Jenner is a name that was recently linked as possibly going. And, you know, I look at a guy like Boone Jenner, and I say, well, he's a fourth-line guy, center, 13 goals, great on faceoffs. And, you know, our biggest problem this year with the power play was faceoffs. I mean, we'd lose the faceoff, it seemed 80% of the time on the power play. That cost a quick 20, 25 seconds because they clear the puck down the ice. When the goalie make a save and hold on to the puck, we lose the faceoff. And, you know, you pick up a guy like him who's a veteran who can play shorthanded. He can win faceoffs, and on the power play, he wins the faceoff, and you get him off of there. I just think that could be a real positive move for the Sabres.
Don't you think they've got Sam Carrick they could do the same thing with?
Right, Carrick's not as good as Jenner on faceoffs, and Carrick's not as good offensively as Jenner. And Jenner's a leader. Jenner's been, you know, a guy in the locker room. He's been one of those guys for years. I just think that he would be a perfect fit for a year, two-year contract. It's not going to cost you that much. And I think they're going to lose Tuck because you can't keep Tuck and Byram. I'd rather have Byram, and we got replacements for Tuck. So
do we actually know any of this? Like Jenner versus Carrick on draws or 80%?
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Percent on power plays. We actually know these numbers, or are we just...
No, Mike. I mean, okay. 80%.
You're just saying that you felt it was most of the time.
Yeah.
It seems like we lose all the faceoffs on the power play.
Okay, but they don't. And that's, you know, not really what happens. Looks like to me, what I'm looking at is Carrick is better in that department than Jenner.
Boone Jenner. Yeah.
Not to say the caller isn't right about the rest of it.
I like the player. I just don't think there's a need. They've got Carrick to play that role. And if they want to use their faceoff guy on power plays like Carolina was doing with Jordan Staal, you know, you win the draw, get off of there. They did some of that. He ended up playing some on the power play too, because, you know, whatever, he was hot and scoring. I just think it's a duplicate of a guy you traded for already that's under contract for a very reasonable deal. So, you know, it's to me splitting hairs a little bit. Is Jenner the better overall player? Is he a better skater? Is he a better this or a better that? It's just not a role. It's not a role I need more of on this team.
Okay,
if I trust Carrick, and
is he a trade too?
I tend to, no. He's the UFA.
Okay,
so I mean, you could just sign him, but I don't know. I don't think it's a fit myself.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Just looking over my stuff here.
Which stuff is that?
Just different things I wrote down for today.
Oh, I see.
Here's one. Can I change the subject from... Now we get another caller on the Sabres. I don't know. Hopefully it's not face-off stats. Because it doesn't even count. It's not even as serious a thing to be on the hockeyreference.com pages. The team pages. And I don't know. For me, that says something. Billy is next. Hi.
Hey, guys. Yeah, listen. You know, it seems really funny, like it, the way you guys are going through things. It reminds us of what happens up here in Toronto. We want to get this. We want to get that. We want to. And look what it's gotten us. It's gotten us nowhere. Matter of fact, we've taken a bunch of steps back. Look, I really like what the Sabres did this last year. And I'll go off the Sabres, and I'll go to baseball for a second. I thought the Baltimore Orioles, with the prospects they had, were going to rule baseball for the next 5 years, except for maybe the Dodgers. That's how many prospects they had, and that's how good they looked. And look what happens. They trade prospect, they trade this guy, they trade that guy for one-year guys, and what happens? The Baltimore Orioles are now irrelevant. Everybody in that organization should be fired, as far as I'm concerned. And that's where it takes me back to the Sabres. I love the way the Sabres looked. I think, yeah, can we improve? Sure. But I think the one thing that we're all we're all not taking into consideration is we've now got that 1 year under our belt, that 1 year of getting better, and everybody has that 1 year of seeing what the playoffs is like. I think we're only going to improve. And, I mean, if we can improve the team by doing something, yeah, I get it, I guess. But the one thing you can't be afraid of is to spend money. And if Tuck's going to cost you that amount of money, spend the damn money on him. If you have prospects down on the farm, that's great. But I don't want to trade Tuck and then these prospects come up and they're not ready and they're not good enough. We hear all the talk of how good they are. I mean, here in Toronto, our team is going to the Calder Cup final. We're up 3-0 on the Chicago team. What does that mean? Does that mean we're going to be great next year? No. Go with the veteran guys. Go with the guys. If you have to pay the money, don't be cheap, and it will reward you in the end.
Well, it doesn't, Billy. It doesn't have to be Tuck or all kids. That's the point. Like when I can settle into understanding them not wanting to meet an $11 or $12 million a year price tag on a player like Tuck at his age. What I want to know is, because I want to hang on to him too if I can, but that money gets pretty outrageous, I think. Then what am I going to do that isn't just the kids? And I can't know what is going to happen and what they're going to do, but in order for me to like sign off on Tuck leaving, I'm going to need I need a veteran. I need someone in place. I'm not going to just say, Noah Oslin, you're our top line winger next year. I'm not prepared to do that. I like those guys. I can't say as much as anyone because maybe people like them more than I do. But I'm just not prepared to just hand it all off to Kulik and the kids. I think I need a cup contender. I think gets an adult replacement for Alex Tuck.
I think that's all very reasonable. One reason why I got into this job, this career, was because I would listen to shows like this and be like, wait, no, somebody has to say the thing. Can anybody think of one player the Orioles traded? Anybody out there actually pay attention to the caller? Like, fire all the Orioles executives because they traded all? I can't think of any. There's probably one.
I don't know.
Their team right now, Brian is an Orioles fan. Ask Brian. He's right. Next. Their team right now is all those kids.
Right.
They didn't trade all those guys. They kept them.
What they did is they underperformed. They looked like they were breaking through. 3 years ago, I watched a bunch of the Orioles.
They're all there.
And
Gunner, Rutschman, right. Basayo, Mayo, Couser, Bradish, they're all still there.
What they didn't do is come through as quickly and as
well as
everyone thought they were going to.
What is this guy talking about? He hung up before I could get my mitts on him. What is he talking about, the Orioles? He wants to fire all the Orioles people because they did a thing they didn't do?
That sounds reasonable.
Maybe there's got to be somebody he's thinking of for that. Why would you pull that out of your pocket and use it if you didn't have some backup? But, like, what? That would happen at all. Not to mention what's going on in the American Hockey League. I don't have anything on that, but I just feel like the Orioles are all those same guys, and they're all like mid-20s, and they're losing. Their pitchers all got hurt. That didn't help. They traded Grayson Rodriguez. Rodriguez was hurt for like 2 years and went to the Angels, and now he's hurt again.
Wasn't there? I've got that name of an outfielder in my head that I feel like I've seen playing somewhere else, but I'm not sure if he was one of the young guys.
O'Neill?
Santander,
maybe.
I think he's somewhere else.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. Maybe there's got to be one.
Yeah, he might be the one the guy's thinking of.
Okay.
That's
Brian.
There's not a long list of them.
I'm not sure how serious Brian is about the Orioles anymore, but they also have added young guys. Like Boz is their top pitcher, one of them, and they got him, and he's young. They added him. Anyway, it's just annoying to drive around and listen to shows where somebody doesn't say the thing that, like, what? I try to do that. So do you. Brian Koziol next. We'll talk about the U.S. Open on WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Cowan has a chance to have the lead all to himself if this goes in. And it does. The amateur is leading the way here at the U.S. Open on a Thursday afternoon.
My experience following professional golf is that's probably it.
Nice.
Give him the trophy.
It's an 83 incoming tomorrow.
Ryder Cowan. I don't want this to reflect at all. I hope nobody even would think this badly on Brian because of how much not only do we like Brian and respect him, but how much he knows. Will he know who this guy is? Ryder Cowan. Pressure's on.
I'm going to predict that Brian has seen him play at the Porter Cup.
That's a great call. Is he named for the Ryder Cup? A golfer by the name of Ryder?
Let's let Brian.
All right, Brian.
Let's let Brian.
What have you got?
Okay. Here we go. No official world ranking because he's an amateur. He is a senior at Oklahoma, and he went through the two stages of qualifying in order to get in. He made it, and here he is, and a perfect front nine for him so far. No bogeys, really impressive. And I can't tell you if he is named after the Ryder.
Well done. Good enough. Passing grade.
But you did not see him play in Niagara Falls.
No follow-ups on Ryder Cowan, please.
Fine. It's fair. You don't deserve even... it was rude to ask you the first question. So he is the leader of the U.S. Open. -3 through 10 holes. What kind of day has it been? It's not exactly a non-event today, but, you know, everybody's just sort of... Well, not everybody. What's the lead story today so far?
I think it's playing exactly how probably the USGA wants it, right? You've got leaderboards that are super tight and not that many guys that are under par. And, you know, I don't think I'm not rooting against Ryder Cowan here, but maybe he's at some point going to have a blip bump or two here coming in. And, you know, maybe he will be or won't be, but could be an interesting day one story. But yeah, not a lot of players under par. I think that's exactly how the USGA wants it. Today was the day. If there was going to be any sort of severe wind conditions that maybe got out of hand or people would have said unfair or along those lines where maybe the pin placements, you know, guys are hitting perfect shots and all of a sudden the ball just keeps rolling. Today they were most concerned about the wind today. This is the predicted heaviest gust. So the fact that maybe they're going to get through today with no issues, I'm guessing the people that are running the tournament with the USGA are probably breathing a big sigh of relief. Okay, we move on. And it's playing out kind of how we want. I think there's been birdies out there. So I think that's been fun. I am never one that says like a tournament has to be a certain score. I know the U.S. Open, they love it to be even par if you're winner. But to me, I want all I'm asking for is fluctuation in the leaderboard because that's what's entertaining. That's what's exciting. Like that's why the back nine at the Masters on Sunday is so amazing because you know people can go up and down with swings all over the place. And I think this course sets up for that. I think there are some birdies out there. We saw Scheffler was up and down and up and down. He made a double bogey on 8, and then he had a stretch where he made 2 birdies in 3 holes and kind of got that back going. McIlroy, I think, as well, you know, obviously made some birdies. So I like the way it's playing. I'm okay with it being hard and okay with the fact that maybe the winner is going to be right around even par. But there are some up and down, which is really all I'm looking for on the entertainment side of it.
The wind is whipping. It seems today, from what I've seen of it, the shirts are definitely, you know, you can tell that it's windy, but the scores have held up.
I think what's impressive when it's windy like this is obviously now because the technology on the broadcast is so good that the majority of the shots have the shot tracer, and you're seeing how these guys are just able to control the ball flight and the different ways that they're bringing it in. I'm super impressed by that as one that, you know, watching them because of their great skill. So, I mean, that's something with the wind today I thought was really impressive just from everybody overall.
Bulldog said earlier today to me that he never even thought about DeChambeau for this week.
He's missed the cut in the first 2 majors this year.
One under through 6.
I felt like he wasn't even a consideration, Brian, and he's obviously played, you know, playing pretty well so far, much better than in the, you know, in the Masters of the PGA.
How close might you have gotten to DeChambeau if you were picking?
I don't think I would have picked him either.
Okay.
Upon his major performance and his irons and his distance control into greens have been terrible this year. In the majors that we've seen, I will admit I have not watched him play live, so I can't tell you if he's been better lately on that. But in the majors that we saw him play, he was terrible with his approach shots and distance control, which obviously I think is important in this event. So maybe he's gotten it turned around. I don't think if you gave me 15, I might have even gotten to Bryson.
Okay. What were his odds? Was he in that middle group, probably?
I think he was. I never really looked at his name because I was never – he could have been fourth, like Shoffley, right? I said when I picked Shoffley, I don't really like watching this guy play. I never am rooting for him, but – like, he's a major, two-time major winner. I'd be an idiot not to take him in the group of, you know, the top 20 with the full payout. I never even thought about where DeChambeau was because I just knew I wasn't going to pick him. I didn't care if he was fourth or 80th.
Okay. Plus 2450
right now.
Yeah,
I think that's probably right. Mm-hmm. I would have had the similar mindset as well, Bulldog, with you.
How much of Scheffler did you get a chance to see?
A decent amount of his back nine. I think he's fine. I think he's doing kind of what he's done in the majors this year, which is show us glimpses of giving us thoughts, oh, this guy can win this week, and then he has a couple of mess ups, which he in previous seasons has not. I think just he said it that coming into this week that he says he's just not as sharp as he'd like to be, but he feels like at any moment like that he can play and he can win. He feels like he's got it, but he says he's just a little less sharp than normal, and I think that's probably accurate. I know he was asked quite a bit this week about the career Grand Slam, that now Rory has gotten it from last year's Masters. Like, is that something he thinks about come to the U.S. Open? And he says he only thinks about it when he's asked about it, that he really, really thinks about it in that sense. And I mean, Scheffler's mindset has been pretty, pretty good over the years that we've seen him now come on to the days as being the best player in the world, that he's able to like mentally kind of, you know, categorize where he needs to be to play well. So I probably want to take him at his word that maybe he's not thinking like there's any added pressure. I think he wants to win the Grand Slam. I think that's definitely, but I don't think it's reached the point of like McIlroy at the Masters where it was like the major story every year. Like, is he ever going to get it? Is he ever going to get it? I don't think we're anywhere near that with Scheffler yet, even though it clearly could happen this week where he could pick that off and then we'd have another player on that list.
Are you tracking it closely enough to have a feel for how well you and I are doing? So Bulldog has Shoffley, he has McIlroy. McIlroy is the betting favorite right now. Of course, that's pedigree in that he's in the clubhouse after day one at one under, which is just two back and might end up being closer to the lead than that at the end of it. You know, a couple of his guys bombed, like Spawn and Siwoo Kim, but Scheffler, Koepka, Matt Fitzpatrick still on the course, Justin Rose, a lot of guys. He's very much live here, Brian. We have a problem.
Yeah, he's got a lot of big names that are right there. So, I mean, including Rory, who's been great. You mentioned Shoffley already.
Oberg.
You did pick Oberg, right,
too? Yep, I did take Oberg.
Yeah. Minus one.
Yeah. He's steady, too. I mean, we know he's been in contention to win. He hasn't won a major, but I would echo exactly what you said yesterday. Like, it's coming at some point.
Right.
And you'd probably feel like you missed out if you didn't pick him. So I think that was probably the smart move, and probably I would have done the same, too. And he's right there, too. He's a steady player that doesn't get rattled. Like, this format of, hey, you're going to make bogeys, like, deal with it kind of mentality when you play in an event like this. Like, I think he's right to win this event, Oberg is.
Can I bring this up with Brian, please? You and I have talked about this before. This growing trend of golfers who, after they make their putt and they get the requisite applause from the gallery, they don't even get above their belt with the wave. It's not even a wave. It's like just sort of a flip. It's just like down here, which to me is worse than not doing anything because it's like a dismissive sort of half gesture. That's bad. You don't do this, right? You played today. When you made a putt today, would you ever just only basically move your hand as if that's good enough for the people who are out there paying money to watch you play? I think that's awful.
Yeah, I think you got to reach the hand all the way up to the bill of the cap.
You got to get up here.
I think.
Yeah. Like, Koepka gets at least like to the chest. I'll take the chest. I don't need the hat. I don't need, you know, like you're waving in an airplane. I don't need anything like that. You just got to get above the belt line or else it looks like you're just sort of telling people that you don't like them. You're just offended by them.
Yeah, you're almost mocking them at that point.
You're almost mocking them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, I agree.
How did you play?
We played okay. It's the nine-hole men's league at Pendleton Creek on Thursday night that I think you have participated in at some point in your golf career.
I bet. I was a member there.
Three conditions today. I was I was coming to the golf course with the mentality of Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka that I'm going to embrace these windy conditions today. Yeah.
Yes. Well, Brian, you don't need my advice when it comes to playing golf. You're a much better player than I have ever been. In the breeze, swing with ease. Right, Bulldog? That's what you do. In the breeze, swing with ease.
I don't know what I do anymore.
I like it. Take an extra club and do what you said. I agree with that.
You know?
I need some meatus time. I need some meatus time, and I need like a, I don't know, rapid weight loss or something. I think I'm falling apart physically, Brian.
Oh no.
I think my best years I feel very much suddenly behind me.
Hmm. you're still beating your son though, I hope, right?
No. No.
Oh boy.
No.
Oh boy.
We asked no. Brian a question about the amateur leading the Open. Now it's even gotten harder.
Brian, let me tell you, you're not that familiar with Delaware. Here's what happened at Delaware on Saturday afternoon. We're waiting to tee off on 11. There's a father and a son ahead of us. Their cart is parked past the green, and they're on the green. It's a 286-yard hole. It's a short par four. And my friend John Gale hits. I hit. There's a group of two younger guys behind us in a cart. They're waiting. And Owen is waiting because we've watched him drive the ball over this green regularly. We're like, you can't hit yet. He said, can't hit. One of the guys in the cart is like, I think it's probably safe.
Oh,
chirping,
no.
Right? We ignore him.
Oh, geez.
We ignore him. And we definitely, he said it. There was no question he said it so we could hear him. I mean, he was not just saying it to his friend. He said it so we could hear it. We ignored him. I'm not kidding you. The father and son get in the cart and drove away, and Owen hit his ball right where their cart was sitting. And I turned and just stared at these guys, and they would not make eye contact with me.
Classic.
I love it.
Passive-aggressive behavior.
He is bombing the ball, Brian. Bombing it.
Amazing. That's fun. That's a fun stage to be in where you're just hitting it so great and so far, you walk up there with confidence.
Yep.
Shame on those USDA ball rollback people that spoke yesterday about that and said they wanted to shorten everything up.
Yeah, get out of here with that.
When those two guys who wouldn't look at you the first time or the second time drove away, and you know what they said? He should go play somewhere else.
Right.
Go play a different golf course.
You're too good to play here.
Yeah, go play somewhere else.
All right.
Maybe you guys have a date tomorrow. I won't be here, but thanks for your time as always, Brian.
Sounds good. Bulldog, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Brian.
Brian Koziol on the West Her Hotline. Our man, Ryder Cowan, bogeyed 11, minus two.
It's already
four-way tie for the lead.
It's already happening.
Brian calls in 5 minutes later. We don't even bring his name up.
Can we live bet whether he finishes over or under par right now? Because I would bet over.
Really?
Yes. How many holes he got left?
Very disrespectful. Seven.
Oh, yeah.
You think he's going to go three over on the last seven?
Yes.
All right. I'll bet that with you.
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
It's a bet.
I'll back my guy, Ryder Cowan.
Hang on. Let me go see if I can find that action in my DraftKings app. Oh, wait. It froze.
DraftKings. I'm good for it. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.